Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year we make freedom a reality because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is, and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. Folks, I want to begin the show today by talking about a couple things before I get to the daily intelligence briefing. And the subject that I want to talk about is apathy. Christian voters, evangelical Christians and traditional Catholics, are the largest voting bloc in America. They are also the largest voting bloc in America that is not registered to vote. And they are also the largest voting bloc in America that is registered to vote, but that doesn't vote. Some races are lost, literally, in the political sphere by a couple hundred votes, by the size of a small church, literally. And right now, we're within two votes of a majority in the House of Representatives in Washington State. That two votes can mean everything. It could mean defunding Planned Parenthood, like we came within two votes of doing last year. It could mean stopping what the Attorney General has put out as far as gun control. It could mean all kinds of positive things, and I want to reemphasize this. Politics is a mission field. In fact, I would argue it's the darkest mission field. You know, I there are places and tribes in parts of the world we can't pronounce that have been more evangelized, I think, than Olympia and Washington, D.C., in many respects. And we miss our calling as the government of the people. I think a lot of times we think somebody else is going to do it. And I ran into this yesterday, speaking with a few people, and there is a loss in America right now of constructive criticism. Somebody else's concerns are dismissed. Your concerns, though, become paramount. And that really is not Christian. We're supposed to be looking at what everybody else's needs are and what their concerns are and loving them in that manner and being encouraging and exhorting them. And what I'm finding more and more is that people that make things happen. There's a lot of groups that we have out there that will get together, they'll talk about a problem, and then they go home and the problem never gets addressed or solved. And then there are people out there who are beating their head against the wall trying to solve the problem. They've got a plan, they're moving forward, they're doing all the things that they can to solve a problem, and yet they face massive amounts of criticism for every little detail in the problem. There's no grace and mercy there. And I think it's a lesson for all of us that there is this idea of mutual submission, mutual respect, and we've largely lost it in our culture, and we need to get it back. And it's going to start getting back, I believe, among Christian men. We have to, as Christian men, take that leadership role and show each other respect. And more importantly, too, and this is something that I learned a long time ago, that you need to know what your own weaknesses are and be readily admitting of what those weaknesses are. And be able to trust somebody else enough that you can just defer that expertise to them. You don't publicly humiliate them. You don't dismiss their concerns. But you take them as the expert in the field that the Lord has put them in, as the expert in that field, and really trust. And that's how the body, I think, the church work is supposed to work. Like some are arms, some are hands, some are fingers, some are toes. Christ is the head. And we're missing that idea of working together as a team totally as Christians. And it's being borne out in our politics. You know, people say our politics is terrible. That's because we're not showing up. People look at the country headed in the wrong direction because we're not showing up. We're not being the government of the people. And I hear all of these formulas and strategies and everything else, but it comes down simply to this. Are we going to show up and do something and live our Christianity beyond the four walls of the church or not? And if we're not, then we're really not being Christians. And I hope that makes sense, because it is really coming to a crisis point. I was at the fair, the county fair today. There were literally dozens of people stopping by the Republican booth out there asking for Trump, you know, stickers and signs and everything else. And it was universal what people were talking about. He's got great ideas. He might be rough around the edges, but something has got to give. Something has got to change. But it's not going to take one guy to do it. It's going to take all of us to do it, and allowing the Holy Spirit to work through each one of us to make that happen in the very place that the Lord has put us, and with the abilities that the Lord has given us. And more importantly, we need to be available to make this stuff happen. Because right now, everybody thinks, you know, everybody can't be leaders. Everybody can't be the chief. But we certainly, in mutual submission and respect, can turn a lot of things around and not be apathetic anymore and live our Christianity beyond the four walls of the church. And I hope that speaks to a lot of you out there today across Eastern Washington, Northeast Oregon, and Northern Idaho. And I'm sure you probably feel the same way. But share that message with your friends and family too. And now, from the front, your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. Once again, talking about the ominous comment made at the end of the G20 conference by the Chinese premier, who said, quote, "We're in for turbulent times," end quote. This coming on the heels of Hanjin, the seventh largest shipper in the world, going bankrupt. And, you know, first casualty of the Baltic Dry Index being so low. In other words, the Baltic Dry Index gauges shipping internationally, and it has been in the tank for a while. Also on the international front, the death of the hacker known as Guccifer, that was a hoax. Some people literally confirming this in a couple of actual halfway credible websites, but that he had died in his prison cell, but that's just not the case. It was a hoax. On the national front, and speaking of Hillary Clinton and the email issues, it looks like that Hillary may have evaded jail, but it looks like, frankly, jail might be catching up with her. Her health just very visibly and publicly and dramatically declining. And I'm telling you, I'm hearing rumors from all different sorts of places that Hillary could step down the first week of October, bringing in Kane, the Democrat VP candidate. That brings in who would be the vice president? Biden? Would Obama become the vice president? Could open up all kinds of different stuff. The fact of the matter is, this election is shaping up to be really like none other in history. And there's just kind of this uneasiness among a lot of people out there. And we shouldn't be uneasy. We should just keep focused on Jesus. We shouldn't be uneasy. God knew this would happen before the beginning of time, and that gives me peace. Also on the national front, Health and Human Services is speeding up the trials for the Zika virus, and they're using something, a new technology called messenger RNA. Now, here's a couple problems with messenger RNA. Messenger RNA actually is being used to provoke an immune response. But the problem is, in the process of creating messenger RNA to fight a particular virus, you can actually create genetic mutations as a result of it. And so they're speeding this up, and it's a little bit, I think, premature to do something like this when this is going to be tested on pregnant women. So messenger RNA, but a lot of people haven't heard about this, is new technology for combating viruses. But again, we don't know what we don't know, and I think we have to be careful when we get into these realms. Also on the national front, the election hack in Illinois and Arizona. Now, there's some interesting things going on. First of all, I want to clear something up, okay? There are some computer systems that are out there, but generally speaking, the United States election system is decentralized. Joel Skousen actually did a great article on this, and he brought out the fact that even decentralized, I mean, these aren't connected to some like central server or something like that, as some people would make you believe. But the fact is, there was an election hack in Illinois and Arizona, and it seems like this is being used as an excuse by DHS, Department of Homeland Security, to take over all elections as, quote, critical infrastructure in the United States, when, in fact, it's one of the most decentralized systems in the entire world. Is it perfect? No. I don't like mail-in balloting. It's very prone to fraud. But the fact is, this is counted at the county level. It's about as decentralized a system as you can have. So I find it really curious that suddenly DHS jumps on this and there's all these rumors of the Russians maybe doing something. It just simply is physically not possible to hack the entire U.S. election system. Parts of it, yes. Parts of it internally, could somebody get in there and put in a USB flash drive and upload? Yes. Or figure out some other way of reprogramming? Yes, that could happen. But we have to be done on a massive scale internally. It couldn't be done from like an outside cyber attack from Russia. And that's just the physical computer infrastructure in this country. Also on the national front, the debt at $19.5 trillion. $19.5 trillion. Once again, there's going to be a day of reckoning soon. And this is clearly headed in the wrong direction. So I just want to call everybody's attention to that fact that we are at $19.5 trillion, something that none of us can even fathom, I don't think. Also on the national front, the standoff in North Dakota getting a little bit more press, about 4,000 people out there protesting. And the issue is this a violation of treaty rights? Now, the Sioux Nation is and this particular standing Rock Tribe, they are a sovereign nation. And based on treaty rights, they have all of the same constitutional rights that you and I do. So the question is, why is this trying to be rammed through when there are many other options, viable options that are out there? And it goes to show, once again, that there really is this war on rural America happening and private property rights. And you know, here it is, this standoff. They call in the National Guard in North Dakota. That could happen to any of us. It could happen to any of us. Now, we have reached out, and we'll see what they say over there. But, you know, constitutional rights are constitutional rights, period. And I don't even like using that term, actually. They're God-given unalienable rights protected by the Constitution. And that, doesn't matter who it is worth fighting for. On the regional front, the McIrvin Ranch, we've been talking about that up in Northeast Washington. Well, interestingly enough, a lot of people weighing in on whether Robert Wilgus, the scientist at Washington State University, should resign. A lot of people weighing in on this and calling Washington State University because they had to retract the statement. In fact, the Seattle Times has now come out and admitted it was wrong, that this spurious accusation that these ranchers had released their cattle knowing where a wolf den was so their cattle would die was proven completely false. It was also proven completely false that the science referred to by Mr. Wilgus, that no one had lost cattle. There was no livestock depredation in the study that they did. That was also false. And so now we have a situation where the people rising up, calling out and showing what the truth is, have had a massive effect. Washington State University backtracking tremendously and now receiving tons of phone calls for this guy to step down. He actually, I think, probably should be fired. But typically with tenure that and whatever else might be there, contracts, best just to go after resignation, which you know you can do legally. So I this just goes to show that there is an agenda a lot of times in this environmental science. And we see it all the time. Also on the regional front, at the Bundy trial down in Oregon, the FBI, and this is picked up by Readout News, the FBI actually mishandling evidence down there, it looks like, and allowing into trial, though, Facebook pictures that are pornographic, that were supposed to be apparently private. So some very interesting things going down there. There's some observers that are reporting for Readout News, and just you can keep your eyes on what's happening down there right now, but more questionable evidence handling down there with the FBI, and interesting how that's all going to shake out. Also on the regional front, once again, 2 days left. If you got an idea on a flag for the 51st state of Liberty, please get that picture or idea for a picture in so we can get that flag actually designed and developed and get it out there for introduction here coming up in December for the next legislative session. Also on the regional front, the Attorney General of Washington introducing an assault weapons and high-capacity magazine ban. Now, this just goes to underscore the fact, and this is a great gift, by the way, before the election. My goodness, everybody knows about this. But this just underscores the importance of state house races. We're two votes away from a majority. That majority would stop that legislation from going through. That's how important this next election is. Also, on the local front, the Inslander has done an article again, and this time knocking yours truly for giving an award to the man who saved a dozen lives and brought to a peaceful resolution the Mahler standoff down there in Oregon. The guy that was responsible for doing that, I gave him an award. I thought he earned it. Saved 12 lives. Probably more than that, honestly. And brought everything to a peaceful resolution. Well, the Inlander comes out and says that's like a negative. So now I have to say that Daniel Walters, who wrote this article, apparently does not like peaceful resolutions and does not like the saving of human life. And it just goes to show that you can't trust the Inslander. Also on the local front, election observers are needed. This is one of those elections I think everybody needs to get involved with. Everybody needs to be there for. And one way you can do that is actually observe elections, okay? They are actually going to start training sessions, all right? And there are a couple, but they're starting one tomorrow, 10 a.m. at the Spokane County Elections Office, 10 a.m. at Spokane County Elections Office, 1033 West Gardner, and they will start the election check on October 13th. So if you want to become an elections observer and get involved, you can show up down there, 10 a.m., Spokane County Elections Office, and take the observer training. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for Patriot Radio and Victoria and me. And I really appreciate the words of encouragement that have been sent out by some of you. Really appreciate that. It means a lot. There's, you know, sometimes there's a lot going on in the background in everybody's life, and you know, really, really helpful when people do that. So thank you, and God bless you for those that have sent that those words of encouragement. Also, I want to ask you, if you get a chance, go to Facebook/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. And also, I think that if you have a chance, post something up there or message me with ideas. It's a great way to have your voice heard as well. And once again, this is a listener-supported show, and if you feel like donating, please go to VoteShea.com. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce Perry Underwood, founder of Abortion Anonymous and somebody who's been fighting on the pro-life front for a while now. And Perry, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Thank you for having me, Matt.
So if you could tell the listeners a little bit about your organization. It's relatively new. I mean, this is a pretty pro-life part of the state. So your audience, I think, is very receptive to this.
Well, Abortion Anonymous, which has commonly been known as Abanon, we started about 3 years ago, and it came as a product of my working as a consultant with some of the pro-life organizations here in Spokane. And after 30 years in the corporate world, I came to the conclusion that what we're doing in the pro-life community is not working very well. And so I just felt that God led me to start Abortion Anonymous, or Abanon. And I have to say that the pro-life community, pregnancy resource centers, and so many organizations out there are doing a fantastic job. And they're out there on the front lines. They're trying to keep babies from being aborted. They're trying to help the moms in difficult situations. But what we have is in our country is 60 million babies have been aborted, and there's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 million post-abortive men and women in our country, and they are kind of being overlooked. So pro-life organizations are out there trying to prevent the mess, and Abanon is this organization that's come along to try to clean it up, because my experience has been no one can be involved in an abortion without being adversely affected by it, and we're there to offer a path to freedom, peace, forgiveness, and healing.
Well, I think that there are some people out there that I've actually seen videos of this and heard of videos of this where you'll have an audience and somebody will say, raise your hand if you had an abortion, or stand up if you had an abortion, and let's give them all a round of applause, right? As if, you know, people are seemingly untouched by it or something to celebrate, but that really isn't the case. With the people that you have counseled and talked to and helped, if you can, kind of paint a picture for the listeners about the trauma that is suffered and how it deeply affects not just women, but also men.
Good question, Matt. What's interesting is the psychology community does not recognize what's known as PASS, post-abortion stress syndrome. And post-abortion stress syndrome is modeled after PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And according to the psychological community out there, someone can run over their kitty cat and be traumatically affected by it. But anyone who's had an abortion, these same professionals will not acknowledge that they can be adversely affected by it. PASS, or post-abortion stress syndrome, the symptoms run from addictions such as drugs, alcohol, gambling, pornography, to behavioral issues such as workaholic, activism. I can go on and on how post-abortion stress syndrome shows up in so many behavioral issues in people. And I have yet to have a single interview, and I've interviewed hundreds of people who have been involved in an abortion and yet to find anyone who has not been adversely affected and has some symptom of post-abortion stress syndrome has shown up in their lives.
So give an example of how this manifests with people, and again, not just women, but also with men. I mean, what can somebody look for?
Well, if someone close to you is maybe has an anger issue or an alcohol issue or a drug addiction or on and on, there's so many behavioral issues. That's the first telltale. But now anger issues and alcoholism and gambling, they've been around for centuries, long since abortion's been around. So not everyone who has an overeating disorder or some sort of behavioral issue has had an abortion. However, anyone who's had an abortion, my experience has been some sort of behavioral issue will show up. And they are it could be as simple as obsessive activism, someone who might be obsessively pro-life or obsessively pro-abortion. Those are common symptoms of post-abortion stress syndrome. So there's not just one thing you can look for. It's behavioral issues that are just really abnormal to some degree. And again, everyone that I have ever interviewed has had some sort of issue show up in their life in one way or another.
Now, here in the local area, are we any different than the rest of the country, or are we pretty much similar in the rates of this type of thing happening?
We find that abortion is pretty universal in the numbers. Even the conservative area like Spokane or Eastern Washington, the numbers are basically no different. Another interesting fact is that numbers inside the church are no different than numbers outside the church. Abortion is rampant and has been in the church for many years, and but the shame and the guilt are so traumatic that women just don't talk about it, and neither do men. And rarely do pastors even address the issue from the pulpit, which in their silence, I believe that they're condemning another generation to the same pain and shame as what we've had in the past.
And so with people inside the church, and I've actually heard stories about this, where there's been, you know, something has happened, and very quietly behind the scenes, you know, one parent or the other parent or both, even though they go to church, they think that the best solution is abortion. Where does the education go? How do you talk to pastors about that? Because it seems if it's the same rate that is occurring in the church and outside the church, I mean, we actually have a problem of loving people in our midst and making them feel comfortable, that we will be there for them and love them even if they've made a mistake. And I don't think pregnancy is a mistake, by the way, but I mean, from their own eyes.
Well, I've heard stories where women who were forced into an abortion by their father, who was an elder in the church, and just the thought of, I'm an elder in the church, this isn't happening in my house, and my reputation is online. This is a common, and so sometimes the church culture, where everyone may have a facade of perfection, may in some cases cultivate an abortion culture, where any sin that might be there, whether it's pornography or alcoholism or whatever, is covered up. And so when you have an elder or a pastor whose daughter finds themselves pregnant, it is not unusual to find them taking their daughter down to the abortion clinic.
Boy, I mean, it really comes for me, I guess it comes down to just love, you know, where there's love and trust in the Lord. A lot of these things don't happen. When you're talking to people that have had that kind of trauma, that are suffering from this stress, where does Jesus come into this for you and for your organization, and how do you go about the healing process, and how do you walk people through it?
Excellent question. We have a curriculum that has been written by, we had a handful of post-abortive women participating in it, and I'm writing the curriculum for men right now, but we have our women's curriculum. It's out right now. It's in several different languages. But how we go about that is, we are the only curriculum that I am aware of anywhere for post-abortive women that is very evangelistic. However, our curriculum is specifically targeted towards women who are outside the church. Although our curriculum works well within the church, it is targeted for those outside the church. We are not overtly religious. We try to avoid meeting in churches and places that are known to be religious organizations. And so our curriculum is 8 weeks, where women go through eight weekly sessions, but our curriculum doesn't talk about God or Jesus or any particular scriptures or anything like that until week seven, and then we introduce the gospel through the story of the woman at the well. Now, the reason we do this is there's a parable in the Bible. Some call it the parable of the sower, some call it the parable of the seed, but I call it the parable of the soils, and it's the soils that make the difference. And our curriculum is specifically meant to prepare the soil and prepare women's hearts so that whenever they receive that seed in week seven, they're ready to receive it.
And there are probably some people that will reject it. There are probably some people that might want to walk away at that point. What is, you know, how do you deal with that first? And second, what is your success rate in helping people to cope with this and to move on with their lives?
Well, we've had somewhere near a dozen, I would guess, groups already in the Spokane area, including North Idaho. And I don't know of anyone who has left a group whenever Jesus was brought into the curriculum. We talk about that right up front in our very first session, that conversation about God and Jesus is part of our curriculum. But it's not in your face. It's not so many curriculums you walk into in the first week. It's let's pull out your Bibles and let's open your Bible to, you know, this book and this passage. And that's where they start. Again, that works well for those who are in the faith community, but those who are not in the faith community would reject that from the very beginning. And so what we try to do with very intentional with, is building relationship with these participants long before we start getting into the source of our healing.
You know, I as a veteran, having dealt with people with post-traumatic stress and some of the just horrific things that people see, I don't want to compare them because they're really two apples and oranges type things. But these types of trauma that occur with people, what I've found is that people kind of almost try to punish themselves for it afterwards, and that it can continue in a cycle that spirals downward. Could you comment on that?
That's so true. There is part of the post-abortion stress syndrome is when women, and this affects men as well, but they blame their abortion on future miscarriages. They blame if they have a child that has a sickness, they think God's punishing them for what they've did or what they've done. And that can haunt them in so many ways and affect their lives in so many ways. And anything that happens in the future, many post-abortive men and women will look back at that, and instead of looking at God as a forgiving God, and we've all sinned and come short of His glory, that's for sure, but they'll look at anything bad that happens in their life as some sort of God's punishment for what they've done. And that is very common.
So if you could give the listeners a little bit of an idea of how you got involved in all of this to begin with, and kind of what set you on this path.
Oh, it's a long story, but I'll make it really quick.
You can make it. You can make it long. We have half an hour, so you're good.
All right. Well, I moved to Spokane in 2011 with the idea to semi-retire here, and sold a business in Alaska and moved here. And the a pregnancy resource center hired me to do some consulting work, and I worked for them for 8 months, just really going through everything that they did as a marketing consultant. And one of the things that the director of the center told me, she says, there's 2,000 abortions every year in Spokane, but we only see about 20 women a year going through our post-abortive healing program. And come to find out that there are various churches that offer post-abortive healing, but they're very sparsely attended, if at all. And then I also found out that the lack of success with the post-abortive healing programs here in Spokane is common throughout the country. Post-abortion for pregnancy resource centers around the country is generally kind of a stepchild. Their mission is primarily to save that baby and save that mama and do what they can to keep the abortion from happening. And that is great. That's an awesome task and an awesome responsibility. But having the post-abortive programs for the community is kind of a second fiddle or a stepchild. And the way they were going about it was, I believe, just ineffective. And so bringing in my corporate background and problem solving, how to fix things, I basically said, there's got to be a better way. And I believe the Lord said to me, now that you know what you know, what are you going to do about it? In your monologue to start off the show, you had talked about how people sit back and they look at things and complain about things and do nothing about it. Well, I can't do that. And I did not want to get into this. I did not want to start Abenon. It was the last thing I wanted to do, but I couldn't get away from it. And so I started Abenon and put out a book called Change the Shame, which is a look at abortion as a civil rights issue. very, very rarely do you hear it in that light. And in that book, I talk about Abaddon. And when I wrote that book, it was published in 2013, Abaddon didn't even exist. It was just an idea in my mind. And so when that book was published, I scrambled to get Abaddon started and put together an awesome board. They're behind me and doing some great work. And we've got dozens of volunteers now. People translate our curriculum. We got Abaddon in countries in Europe now and in various states. So it all started with looking at a problem and seeing that what was being done wasn't working and believing that there's a better way and feeling that God pushing me in that direction.
Ian, and I would love it if you could share some of the stories about how the Lord has really provided and helped the ministry go forward.
Well, that's every day. If you knew me really well, you would know that I am one of these guys that I've come from a corporate world, and everything is about goals and plans, and you just know what you're going to do, and if you do A, B, and C, it's going to get you to D, and everything's all structured. What I have learned in the last 3 years that the hardest thing that we're instructed to do by our Lord Jesus Christ is to abide. And every day it's God, show me how to abide. And in that process, even though I'm a very structured and organized guy, this is so huge. This is so overwhelming. Our vision for Abaddon is to be in every major city throughout the world. It may not happen in my lifetime, just like Alcoholics Anonymous, we see Abortion Anonymous being in every major city throughout the world. And this is way beyond me. And in each day, it's prayerfully asking the Lord, how should I spend my day? And I was praying, this is a couple years ago, and as I have in many, many times, saying, Lord, be with me today as I do this, and be with me today as I do this and that and so forth. And I just felt clearly the Holy Spirit saying to me, no, you got it wrong, Perry. I don't want to be with you. I want you to be with me. It's a totally different perspective. It may sound petty to some people, but it's not saying, God, be with me as I do this and bless my plan. It's about asking the Holy Spirit to guide me and lead me, and I to be with Him. And month after month after month, so many things, even daily, things happen that I could have never orchestrated. Recently, I went to Ukraine to start Abaddon there, and the story of how that all came about. I was having coffee with a pastor from Newman Lake, and we were just having coffee, visiting. We do that from time to time. And he said to me, Perry, I feel the Holy Spirit prompting me to introduce you to some missionaries that are here on furlough. And I said, fine. And so a couple of weeks later, I get an email from him. I said, hey, can you meet in my office? These missionaries are here in town. And so I go to his office, and there's this couple, and he introduces me to them and them to me. And he just sits back and says, you guys just talk. And so when I shared with this missionary couple what we were doing and our curriculum, his name is Ruslan Borodin, and his eyes just got wide. And he said, we work with family ministries in Ukraine, and we work with Christian couples. But what you have here is an opportunity for us to take the gospel to our community in a tool that we have never had before. And he asked me, how quickly can you have this curriculum translated into Russian? And my jaw hit the table, because we had just finished the English version and gotten it published. And he also asked, who in your organization can help us launch this in Ukraine? And I'm going, I'm it, guy. And this is a very small organization. But then I remembered one of our board members is from where? Ukraine. And she took the ball and ran with it, and she got our curriculum translated into Russian in just in a matter of weeks. And I went to Ukraine, met with these missionaries there. And I had no idea. He told me, the missionary himself, he said, you know, I've been calling people and letting people know you're coming. I have no idea who or if anyone will show up to this meeting where we're going to talk about Abaddon. And so we go to the meeting that Wednesday evening, and we had 14 women show up. We didn't know if anyone was going to come. The next day, we were going to put on a training for women to become facilitators and hold Abaddon groups. And six of these 14 women that were there the first day had told me that they couldn't come because the training the next day was in the afternoon and they worked and transportation was issues and getting off work and families and so forth. So I knew of the 14 that were there, six of them already told me they could not come. And I'm just hoping and praying that maybe we have three or four show up the next day for our training, which is a four-hour training. Normally it's an eight-hour training, but I had to do it in 4 hours with an interpreter. The next day, we had 19 women show up for our training. The word got out in that community that I was there and what we were doing. And that room, we had 19 women show up for an Abaddon training. Wow. And it just blew me away. And I could go on with story after story after story of how things have happened that were purely God's doing.
And that's such a great testimony because you know you're on the right track when all of those things start to fall in place. Well, this is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio with Perry Underwood, founder of Abortion Anonymous, Abaddon, as it is colloquially called. If you could, Perry, share with the listeners the resources that you have available. People might be actually listening to this radio show today saying, you know what, I've been struggling. I had an abortion, or I was the man that prompted a woman to have an abortion, and I'm not dealing with it well, and I want to be able to talk to somebody. What resources do you have available?
Well, our primary resource is our website. Everything is there. We have groups that are, matter of fact, there's three or four groups starting up here in the Northwest just in the next month or so. So those are groups for women. Our men's curriculum is not written yet. However, there is a brand new book that I just got published in the last couple of weeks. It's called The Big Game, and that is for men. It's an introduction to our curriculum, but it's also a pretty powerful tool of how men can build stronger relationships with each other, and it points them and shows them the need to get involved in an Abaddon group if they have been involved in an abortion in the past. So our website, the primary, is abaddon.org. We have our curriculum is on available. However, we don't really believe that an effective use of our curriculum is just to buy the book and read it at home. You need to get involved in a group. And so there's anyone interested in joining a group, be it man or woman, there's an email address that they can go on there and just keep their anonymity and send us an email, and we'll have someone get in touch with them and guide them through the process. There are several resources on our website, books and videos and websites and so forth that will help people. But the main thing is, if anyone out there in this area has been involved in abortion and really hasn't dealt well with it, I find that to be really rare if they haven't gone through some sort of post-abortion healing program of some sort, then just send us an email and we'll have someone get in touch with them, and it's completely anonymous.
So does anybody push back against what you're trying to do and helping people heal?
You know, that's I anticipated more pushback from the pro-abortion community. However, those who are really free-thinking and intellectual people understand that there truly are people who suffer from an abortion. So I have not had pushback from the pro-abortion community at all. However, the pushback I have gotten has been from people within the faith community, in that some claim that our curriculum, even though they've never read it, is not religious enough. If they were to read it, they would, I think, change their mind. But that's been my main pushback is just people within the faith community just not understanding what they were talking about.
You know, sometimes the hardest audience is the church. I've actually found that a couple times.
Yes.
Speaking on the trail. Well, I always ask guests this question, and it's about young people. You know, if you had a message for the younger generation that's coming up, and, you know, a lot of polling is showing that the millennials are actually pro-life, what would your message be about this issue where maybe you could talk to them ahead of time?
I think what Abinon is all about is to leave the judgment, the condemnation out of it. Yes, we are very pro-life, and yes, we believe that the unborn need protection and have the full rights of all citizens as granted in the Constitution. We believe that. But yet there are, in this country, or just in the Spokane area, there's 80,000 post-abortive men and women in Spokane. We can't go back, and none of us can go back and undo what we have done. So we've all sinned. We've all come short of God's glory. Let's be forgiving. Let's not be condemning and judgmental, because the pain that these people, many of these people, are going through already is condemnation enough. We don't need to heap more on them. And that's what we're all about, is cleaning up the mess and offering grace, forgiveness, and healing to these people.
So if somebody wants to volunteer, my wife is from Ukraine. I know there's a lot of need for Slavic-speaking people to help translate. My wife actually volunteered at a crisis pregnancy center a while back. If people want to volunteer, maybe they want to give a little bit of money to you to help the ministry, where can they go specifically to do that?
Abinon.org, Abanon.org. And thank you for mentioning that. We're a startup organization. Yes, we need money. As a matter of fact, there's a gal we want to hire in Ukraine. She is leading our organization out there, and we want to hire her full time. And that country is so poor that she can make a very good living for $350 a month. And we are in the process of raising support for her so that we can hire a full-time Ukrainian to get Abinon started throughout that nation. And she's already doing it, but we just want to get her on staff. So that's one thing. But we have videos we want to get done. The need for money is huge. There's never enough for what we would like to accomplish. And also volunteers. You can just go to our website. There's a place you can click when contact us, and we'll be in contact with you if you identify yourself, and we'll find a way to put you to work.
Well, Perry, I just want to extend from me directly to you that if there's anything that I can do to maybe help facilitate connections or just help you in any way, shape, or form with this great ministry in the community, you know, please let me know, because there's such a need for these things, and I think that we don't focus locally sometimes. I think we get caught up on national stuff and even state stuff when we really can have a great effect at the local level.
I appreciate that, Matt.
Well, thank you very much for joining me today, and if you have any final thoughts for the listeners here in the last couple minutes that we have, please go ahead and just kind of speak your heart and what the Lord has put on your heart today to share with everybody out there in Eastern Washington, North Idaho, and Northeast Oregon.
Well, you said something in your monologue to start off the show that really resonated with me. Matter of fact, I enjoyed it. It went by way too fast. I was kind of not looking forward to me coming on, because I was enjoying you so much. But something you said really resonated with me, and it is all too often that people sit around and complain. They complain about the government. They complain about this and that and whatever. And my response is, okay, what are you doing about it? And we have the responsibility as followers of Christ to make this world a better place, to bring His kingdom to this world. And so there are so many opportunities for people to get involved and make this world a better place. And I just encourage people to do just that. Find what God's purpose is for you and go to work, because you're needed.
There is such a need out there, and it seems like people get caught up, well, I don't have the ability to do this, when really the Lord will call qualify the called instead of call the qualified. And it really has to do with your availability, just getting out there and loving your neighbor in a tangible way. It really does.
If you're not scared to death with what you believe God has called you to do, you probably haven't heard him right.
I'm going to use that in the future. That is the truth right there. Oh, he will call you to a place where are you sure, Lord? You know, what a question to ask God too, right?
Right.
Oh, I love that. Well, Perry, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Really appreciate it. And one more time, if you could plug your website.
Abanon.org, ABANON.org.
All right. Perry, thank you. And we'll have you back on again. Keep up the great work. Again, if there's anything we can do to help, let me know, okay?
Thanks, Matt.
All right. Perry Underwood, founder, Abortion Anonymous, a great ministry out there, helping healing. And I heard some of the things there that he was talking about, and it really resonated with me, because I've heard just similar words. I've heard similar perspective, you know, from people that have suffered trauma in what I can relate to, and that is in battlefields and war. And what a toll abortion has brought on America. You know, 50 plus million. And I actually was speaking with a couple people today, and we have an idea for the Spokane community and Spokane Valley community. So stay tuned for that, because I would like to see if we could get a lot of involvement from everybody out there that's listening to this radio show to help with this idea and this project. So I think it's going to have a great impact on the community for years and years to come. So stay tuned for that part of it. I want to go back very quickly as we wrap the show up to some of the things that are going on in the news right now. And I specifically want to talk about the stuff at the national level. Now, we've been talking here for a couple of weeks about government being above the law, and this idea that you know, when as soon as that starts happening publicly without any sort of accountability, that it really begins to tear at the fundamental fabric, the strong fabric of the republic. And today there's a report out about John Kerry and the State Department funneling millions to his daughter's nonprofit. And this shares that similar line of what is being alleged with Hillary Clinton. And it just seems to me that if we have made politics, instead of being something that's a service, that you go and you serve people, to something that is just about making money, then very clearly we as Christians we must get involved to turn that around and root out that type of corruption. Because it's going to stay there as long as we stay on the sidelines. It's going to stay there as long as we stay silent. And I've said this before on this show, that there was a report done by the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services. It was the precursor to the CIA in World War II. And at the end of World War II, the OSS did this report, and it was I think it was Appendix 4. But this report was on how could it possibly have occurred, the Holocaust, in an ostensibly Christian country. How could that have happened? And the OSS came to this conclusion. This is all the pages that they did on this and studying this came to this conclusion, that it was that the German government deprived successfully the Christian church of living out its Christianity beyond the four walls of that church. That is what it resulted in. And I would submit to you that the status quo, what we're doing right now, it's not working. Things are continuing to get worse. And we are not focusing, I don't believe, where we need to focus. We need to focus on Christ in every single area of our lives. That includes politics, includes job, family, obviously. We need to do that. We need to focus on Christ in every area there. But we also need to live out our Christianity beyond the four walls of the church in every area of our lives. And it's scary. It's scary to talk about Jesus when the Lord puts it on your heart, talk to somebody at work about Christ. It's scary to do those things. And we can't live in that state of fear. We got to trust God. God is going to provide. God is going to take care of us. And together, you know, as a body, you know, we need to be wise too in how we approach things. We need to be wise in how we talk to people. And that there does need to be that mutual submission, that mutual respect, that but for the grace of God, there go I. I was talking to somebody in a prison ministry today and talking about just the one mistake that landed somebody in jail, but how the Lord was using that time in prison to completely change their lives. And on Saturdays when this prison ministry goes out to Arrowhead Heights, it's like a revival. That was the word they used. Because folks were put in a position where they had to rely on God, and God met them there. It wasn't about their ability. Wasn't about their charm or their good looks or something. It was because Jesus Christ loved them and met them right where they were at. Right where they were at. And man, that to me is so encouraging, because it's life-changing, not just for the people it's happening to, but it's life-changing for everybody that witnesses it as well. So as we go today, find that thing the Lord wants you to do. Trust in Him. And do what He's calling you to do with all the passion you possibly can, and live out your Christianity beyond the four walls of the church. Well, this is Matt Shea. Thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today. And remember to pray for a revival of repentance. We still live in the greatest country in the world, despite the internal evil we're facing. And you know, if we stand up, it'll embolden others to stand up as well. Remember to do everything you can to defend freedom locally. May God bless all of you, and may He make this generation the greatest one.